Over the past month, President Donald Trump and his Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross have announced steep tariffs on U.S. imports, including steel, aluminum, and a whole host of products coming from China. The president's goal is to level the playing field internationally so that U.S. companies can compete. But there are concerns, even from some Republican allies, that the tariffs could spark trade wars that drive up prices for raw materials used by U.S. companies and the prices for finished products purchased by American consumers. Today, we'll find out how the announcements are hitting Western Wisconsin business leaders and trade scholars right here on the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning on Ideas Network stations 88.3 WHWC Menominee Eau Claire and 88.7 WRFW. I've got three guests on the program today, and in no particular order, I'd like to welcome them now. First, joining us from his office at UW Eau Claire, Ali Aboutalabi. He is a political science professor at UW Eau Claire who studies international trade, among other things. Ali Aboutalabi, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. Also, we've got Mark Tyler. He is president of local manufacturer OEM Fabricators in Woodville, and he joins us today by phone from UW River Falls. Mark Tyler, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. And we've got Scott Sinner, partner with SB&B Foods, which produces food-grade soybean products for export. They have operations in North Dakota and also a facility in Bloomer. Scott Sinner, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Great to have you. Listeners, we want to hear from you as well. If you've got a question or a comment about how all of this trade talk boils down to the local level or whether it does or not, do you think it's a good thing that the president is trying to steady trade relations or trying to what he calls balance them so that they're more equal with other countries, or do you think it could spell trouble for the U.S. or for Western Wisconsin particularly? Please give us a call, 1-800-228-5615. So, Ali Aboutalabi, if you could start us out here, I think we all have a better or a general understanding of what a tariff is, but could you lay it out for us in layman's terms?
Well, tariff is simply import tax that countries impose on importation of commodities or services in order to promote those interests or national interests or to level the playing field, so to speak. And there are other forms of tariffs or non-tariff barriers, so to speak, that countries also use as tools to protect their economies, such as safety requirement or quota systems, and so on and so forth. So countries use tariffs, import tax, and non-tariff barriers, or NTBs, in order to promote their own national interests when it comes to the economic engagement with the rest of the world. The major discussion, of course, is that tariffs and non-tariff barriers, they simply distort prices, and they are not good tools for trade, which basically could hurt everybody in the game of trade.
So, speaking, you know, from the U.S.'s perspective, or internationally, have tariffs always been a thing? I mean, have they always been part of doing business overseas?
Well, of course. I mean, tariffs has been part of the discussion. And after World War II, of course, we had the idea of general agreements on tariffs and trade, which brought countries together to try to negotiate the way that they can do away with tariffs or reduce tariffs over the years, which eventually turned to be more successful, culminating to the creation of World Trade Organization in 1995. And the WTO's mission is to reduce tariff barriers among all participating countries, eventually reducing them to ideally to zero, so to speak. But of course, we have so many countries members of WTO, at least about 168 countries or so, and each country kind of formulates its own national interests based on the realities at home, and they try to protect the economy and promote economic development. So you have so many countries involved each on his own right try to promote his own interests. And some of them see tariffs as a way to strengthen their hand in global trade. So trade and tariff go hand in hand. But in terms of liberal economics, something that this country has promoted for a very long time, the basic argument is that tariffs, again, distort prices, and it's not a good thing for everybody or for any of the countries involved.
And I wanted to play a couple clips here, if the technology will allow me. I want to start off with the, again, in chronological order, on March 1st, or right around that date, during a press conference at the White House that included owners of steel mills, President Donald Trump shook international markets when he announced a plan to impose new import taxes, known as tariffs, of 25% on foreign-made steel and about 10%, I believe, on foreign-made aluminum. And here's what he said about that.
We'll probably have everything completed by next week. We'll be imposing tariffs on steel imports and tariffs on aluminum imports. And you're going to see a lot of good things happen. You're going to see expansions of the companies. I know that, David, you said you'd be expanding. Tim, I know you said you were expanding. You're
absolutely
all, pretty much all of you will immediately be expanding if we give you that level playing field, if we give you that help. And you're going to hire more workers, and your workers are going to be very happy. They're going to be very, very happy. And again, what's been allowed to go on for decades is disgraceful. It's disgraceful.
So, Mark Tyler, I'd like to go to you as a leader of a company who uses quite a bit of steel and aluminum. What goes through your head, or what went through your head when you heard those words, or when you first heard about these tariffs on U.S. steel and, or I mean, on imported steel and aluminum?
Well, we're just to give you a little bit of background on OEM. We don't do a lot in aluminum, but we do a tremendous amount in steel. We've purchased in the area of $20 million worth of steel annually. The thing that concerned us when we heard about the tariffs is that if we look back to the October-November timeframe of 2017, we started to see steel prices start to trend upward. The economy was gaining steam, and so we saw lead times started to go out, pricing started to increase. If we look at that time frame from like October, November of last year, we were at about $600 per ton. In March, we're at $853 per ton. This is for hot rolled carbon, which represents probably the largest portion of the steel area. We tend to be advocates of free trade. We do recognize there are some countries that are bad actors, and sometimes things need to be done to deal with those situations. But more and more, we're seeing our customer base in Europe. Now, we don't ship product to Europe, but we partner with companies from Europe, and this adds a lot of tension. When we look, any time you look at increasing a price, that's very burdensome. Just to get the price increases appropriate and fair, and obviously nobody ever wants to see a price increase because ultimately that ends up affecting final good or finished products.
What does it mean for your bottom line? I mean, at this point, I guess it's interesting to hear that the prices were going up anyway because things are improving economically in the U.S., but how much does it eat into what you're able to do, or how much does it eat into, say, expansions or whatever future plans you might have?
It really depends on how fast we can react and what our willingness of customers are to work with us on this. You know, frankly, we've had customers that have said, we will not accept a price increase. Well, when we're looking at increases of this magnitude, then we just can't accept the work. One of the things that we've seen happen and I think this is fair to say it's across all of the states, not just Wisconsin, is that with unemployment at 2.9%, and companies' difficulty in hiring people, capacity of manufacturers to crank up or to take on additional work is constrained. So part of the challenge is when a customer says, well, I'll move the work to somebody else. A year ago, that was very possible. Today, they may be challenged to find somebody that has the ability to take any additional capacity just because the market is strong and the ability to ramp up is difficult. We're seeing lead times go out. We're seeing prices go up. At one time, you could lock in a longer-term contract with a steel mill. Today, we've got some mills that will only assure a price for 24 hours. And we've got other mills that will accept a purchase order with no price. They'll price it at the time of delivery. So the world has changed very, very rapidly on this.
I would think that agreeing on a purchase order without knowing the price could be a little scary on your end.
It's absolutely scary. We do our best to anticipate that. We work with our customers and communicate with them what some of the challenges are, and they certainly are aware of the challenges as well. But it makes for a uncertain situation, to say the least.
We're talking about how trade policy in Washington might affect Western Wisconsin today on the West Side. I'm joined by Mark Tyler. He's president of OEM Fabricators in Woodville. We're also speaking with Ali Abutalabi. He's a political science professor at UW-Eau Claire who studies international trade. And we're going to hear from Scott Sinner in just a bit. He is a partner with SBNB Foods, which produces soybean products for export. They've got operations in North Dakota and in Bloomer. So 1-800-228-5615 is the number for our listeners to call in. We'd love to hear what you're thinking. What's your take on the president's plan? Do you think it's a gamble that the U.S. can win? Already we're seeing some negotiations happening, and we'll get more into that in a little bit later in the program. Ali Abutalabi, does this come as a surprise from the president? Because, you know, during the 2016 campaign, even during his stop here in Eau Claire, the president was pretty tough when it came to – he had harsh words for the way that the U.S. had negotiated its trade deals. And he let everybody know that he wanted to change things with regard to how we trade with China.
Well, I guess you have to judge Donald Trump having in mind his rhetoric versus his action. Even in terms of the steel and aluminum tariff, they already have announced exemptions for Canada and for Mexico and Brazil, Argentina, and European Union. So who else is in the mix? That's China. It seems the target is really geared toward China and not other countries. And so when it comes to what the administration says, what Donald Trump says, I usually pause and think about it in terms of rhetoric versus action. And the way I look at him is that he acts more or less like a poker player, that he comes out strong and maybe with some bluff and try to get the best deal, as he puts it. So putting America first, and arguing that America has signed bad deals and he's the ultimate dealer and he wants to create new deals. So he's kind of coming strong and then perhaps backing away. At least that has been with the case with the steel and aluminum. And predictably, Europeans and other countries have threatened that they will retaliate, and so have said the Chinese. So that's what I said earlier, that, you know, ideally tariffs are not a good thing, so to speak. They would hurt everybody. But what the United States can protect its economy and its national interest without tariff or through renegotiation of some of the deals is a matter of open debate. But the way I see it is that even if you have grievances against other countries, we can always bring those grievances to the attention of World Trade Organization, where 95% of the world trade is going through. And based on bilateral or multilateral discussion, we can resolve some of the issues. Unilateral approach, kind of imposing tariffs and retracting from them or threatening to impose new tariffs, it simply creates some kind of unpredictability and dilemma that Mark has already mentioned when it comes to the price of products.
But going through the normal channels, you know, going to the WTO with grievances and whatnot, would that, could it theoretically take longer? I mean, would this approach, which you say brings some unpredictability for people like Mark and others across the country, would it force quicker action, do you think? And I do want to get into a little bit about the exemptions that were made with regard to the steel.
Well, the way I see it, you know, United States last year in 2017 had over $796 billion in trade deficit. Off of that, of course, we had a major trade deficit in terms of trade in goods as opposed to services. When it comes to services, we actually had a trade surplus of over $242 billion. So what we are weak at is really trading goods, not services. Mm. So perhaps we could focus more on services and try to remedy our trade deficit in goods. So aluminum and steel, or the new kind of proposed $50 billion tariff that came through the weekend, the idea of it, is not really the solution. These are kind of band-aid approach. If United States has major trade deficit, as I said, with the rest of the world, we need to think structurally and long-term. And that is where WTO comes in. Again, the other ways, of course, to improve your situation through higher productivity, better technology, job retraining, and so on and so forth. But steel and aluminum is only a very small portion of the bigger picture.
With that, let's take our first break here on the West Side. We are speaking with Ali Abutalabi. He is a political science professor at UW-Eau Claire. Mark Tyler is president of local manufacturer OEM Fabricators in Woodville. Scott Sinner is with us as well. He's partner with SBNB Foods. We're going to take a brief pause here on the West Side. When we come back, we'll get into a little bit more about how these trade deals have changed. And, of course, we have to talk about the second announcement on tariffs that the president made just last week that has to do with Chinese products. Lots of retaliation alleged. Nothing concrete at this point, but still the markets have reacted. 1-800-228-5615. The question is, how do you think these trade policies and proposals coming out of Washington could affect businesses and consumers in western Wisconsin? We'd like to hear from you. 800-228-5615.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin Extension, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association. Support also comes from Chanhassen Dinner Theaters, performing Disney's new Broadway musical, Newsies, a high-energy song and dance celebration, presented by Star Tribune. More information is at chanhassendt.com.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Good Monday morning to you. I'm Rich Kramer. I'm talking with Scott Sinner, partner of with SBNB Foods, which exports food-grade soybean products from Wisconsin overseas. Mark Tyler is president of OEM Fabricators in Woodville, and Ali Abutalabi is a political science professor who studies international trade at UW-Eau Claire. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. We're talking about how President Donald Trump's administration's trade announcements of tariffs against steel imports and aluminum imports, as well as announced tariffs on Chinese products, how all that could affect western Wisconsin. We'd love to hear from you. So right before the break, we talked a bit about how the tariffs, it seemed like the steel and aluminum tariffs were targeting, kind of going after China. Some people allege that, well, the president was always complaining about China, you know, dumping steel into different markets. And I wanted to go to Mark Tyler on this and just ask, where do you get your steel from? I mean, are you buying it? How much does Chinese steel impact the U.S. market?
Well, my understanding is that about 2% of steel imports to the U.S. come from China. Now, that's not a large number, but that doesn't mean that the steel from China does not impact markets, because I think part of the challenge has been is that there's a perception that they're dumping steel into the world or the global market at very low prices, and that has a ripple effect through the entire world market. So I think that's part of the challenge. Where OEM gets its steel, the bulk of our steel comes from U.S. and Canadian producers. We do have products that come out of Europe, primarily in Scandinavia. But I would say the vast majority, probably 75 to 85%, comes out of North American mills.
Interesting. And what about these exemptions, Mark Tyler? The president, once the steel and aluminum tariffs were announced, the European Union came out with a list of U.S. products that it was considering retaliatory tariffs on, including Harley-Davidson motorcycles and cranberries. Cranberries is a huge export from Wisconsin. We're the number one producer. So after that, we saw exemptions that included Canada and a lot of the European countries. Does that kind of after-the-fact exemption soothe the market, or will that improve prices, do you think?
No, I don't. I really don't think it will. I think that the prices were on their way up before the announcement of the tariffs, and I think what the tariffs have done is just underpinned or emboldened the steel producers to be more aggressive with their pricing. So where this will shake out, it's common for steel mills to announce a price increase and everybody stops buying steel, and a week later the prices go back down. That won't happen now, because the economy is chugging along at a really nice clip, and demand for steel is high. We're at about 78% of capacity utilization. That's up, and it'll probably go higher. I think the intent of the administration is really to encourage additional or new investment in steel production capacity, so that the U.S. has the ability to produce the steel that it needs. That will take time, but I don't think that any of these exemptions will take any of the pressure off of prices in the short term.
And Ali Abitlabi, what about the exemptions coming after the fact, after the announcement was made? Some people have said some people have alleged that the president just kind of made this announcement on a whim, and that his administration had to scramble. And what does it say to you when you see a list of exemptions coming from countries, specifically European countries, that did have some threats for the U.S. in response to the president's announcement on steel and aluminum?
Well, I guess, it's hard to predict President Trump's behavior, so to speak, given his background. But perhaps he was testing the market, so to speak, to see how the market would react. It would be naive to argue that we can impose new taxation and not expect any retaliation by Europeans or the Chinese and others. So, as I said before, if you want to deal with this issue fundamentally, you have to do it differently. And that sense of kind of ad hoc proclamation by the president is simply breed more instability and uncertainty in terms of U.S. behavior. Recall President Trump actually has said on a few occasions that we need to be unpredictable. So we do not tell our enemies, so to speak, and others what we have in mind, at least when it comes to question of war and troop dispatchment and others. So in a way, it seems the president likes uncertainty. But remember, the market cannot function on uncertainty. Market need definitely some order, some certainties. And again, as such, Trump's approach is problematic. So when it comes to this steel and aluminum tariffs and then immediately retracting from it and talking about exemptions, it simply sends mixed signals to other countries. And as was said, it's very hard to make adjustments and to market in such a short period. And this is not a good approach.
With that, I'd like to transition here, and we talked about the World Trade Organization a little bit, and I wanted to play another clip from that same signing or that same press conference that President Trump held when he announced the steel and aluminum tariffs that earlier this month. This is the president's comments on the WTO.
We'll probably have everything completed by next week. We'll be in.
That is the wrong clip. Here we go.
The WTO has been a disaster for this country, for our country. In fact, the rise of China economically was, if you look at it, directly equal to the date of the opening of the World Trade Organization. It has been great for China and terrible for the United States, and great for other countries, but terrible for the United States.
Ali Abutalabi, your take on it, is what the president's saying true?
You know, it's funny. We were one of the countries that pushed for the creation of WTO, succeeding the GATT, or General Agreements on Tariffs and Trade, because our principal policy in the post-World War II has been one of liberal economics, deregulation, opening markets, and arguing that free market and liberal market is the best way to create wealth in all countries, not only rich countries, but also developing countries. We promoted that notion and ideas all the way to recent times. It is true that China has emerged, and so has India and other emerging markets. And since they have an abundance of semi-skilled and skilled, less expensive or cheaper labor, that gives them a competitive advantage or comparative advantage to compete with the United States and other rich countries. A solution by the West, including this country, is being to actually increase capital investment in many of the emerging markets, such as China and India and elsewhere, and through investment abroad, get engaged in production and to the point that these days a product could be made in about 20, 30 different countries, and it's very hard to track who owns what. In that game, corporations, including American corporations, have been among winners. But when it comes to the question of consumers, it may be a different story. So Donald Trump basically arguing that free trade is not a good thing, and he wants to have a quote-unquote Americanist approach whereby he can protect American economy through some kind of protectionism. At the heart of that debate is really is the question of how you manage your economy. For example, the Chinese economic management is basically based on a different model. That is where the state is heavily engaged in economic activities, including research and development and investment abroad and so on and so forth. So the state has deliberate policies targeting economic growth in different sectors of the economy, in industry, in agriculture, in services, technology, etc. And as such, it's very clear to the state in terms of targeting and trying to achieve those targets. In the United States, our approach is totally the opposite. We basically let the market do the jobs. So when it comes to evaluating Chinese behavior, we accuse Chinese of distorting prices by the state intervention in the economy through kind of price control, through subsidies, through export encouragement mechanism, etc. And some of that accusation is correct. But this is how the rest of the world functions, at least among developing countries. Hmm. The state is an active participant in the economic trade abroad. Hmm. In this country, the state is not, as such, an active participant. to a much lesser extent, so to speak. So we could, I guess, talk about the economic management as a root cause of all these problems. But again, if you have time, we can talk about that.
That's I'll jot it down here. I wanted to go to Scott Sinner, though. He's been sitting patiently waiting for his turn to talk. We're a reminder to the listeners, we are talking about how trade policy set in Washington and around the globe impacts Western Wisconsin. Specifically, we're talking about a series, a couple of different tariffs announced by President Trump against steel and aluminum, and also a whole rash of tariffs against Chinese goods. So on Thursday, 1-800, by the way, 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call in if you've got a question or comment. On Thursday, President Trump announced he would implement the second round of tariffs, this time on Chinese goods. He directed U.S. trade representatives to level tariffs about $60 billion worth of Chinese imports. This comes after an investigation into intellectual property theft against China. So the next day, China announced a list of 128 products that could face retaliatory tariffs. It seemed like they were prepared for something like this. What wasn't on the list was soybeans from the U.S., which is a major export that goes to China. And that's why I want to bring in Scott Sinner. He is a partner with SBNB Foods, which produces food-grade soybean products for export in Bloomer. And also, they've got operations. They're based in North Dakota. So, Scott Sinner, soybeans aren't on this list, but a lot of people are expecting China, if they, you know, ratchet this up, to go after U.S. soybean production. What does that mean for SBNB Foods or the U.S. soybean market?
In terms of agriculture in general, I think the fear of tariffs on soybeans is a big deal. So when it comes to soybean tariffs, the Chinese market is, you know, 60% of all the soybeans grown in the United States go to China, and one of the fears that the agriculture industry has is that right now, for China to have max effect on their tariffs, they're not going to announce a tariff right now on soybeans. Mm. They're going to wait until farmers plant their crop in the ground, and then they'll announce a tariff. Because at that point, they'll have captive audience and a captive market, and there's really nothing for farmers to do. If they were to announce one right now, they could potentially change some planting decisions and move forward that way. So, you know, when we have 40% current market share in China as a country, Brazil has 48% market share in China. And, you know, so there's other places they can buy those soybeans.
So you're thinking that, I mean, of course, all of this is up in the air. I've just read some articles today, this morning, that we're busy. Our people are talking with their people. They're trying to hash something out. China says that, you know, they've got a premier that says they want to avoid this. But so you're thinking that China could still come out with a list of products, including soybeans, later on. So that would be what? And when is planting? I think that's June, right?
Yeah, I mean that's certainly the fear. Okay. You know, when it comes to trade negotiations, unfortunately, I mean, agriculture, when it comes to export sales, is a shining star of goods that we export as a country, and we're very good at exporting our commodities. Now, at the same time, every time we do a trade deal with a different country, agriculture is used as a leverage piece.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, ultimately, the Chinese or whoever we're trading with is going to look for the highest leverage to be able to take max effect. It was no different than back in the early 2000s when George W. Bush tried putting a tariff on steel against the EU, and the EU came out and put a tariff on Florida oranges. Well, why did they do Florida oranges? Well, because George W. Bush's brother was the governor of Florida,
and they wanted
max effect. Well, the Chinese or whoever it may be are going to look and see. Okay, we've got the Midwest, a large percentage of which voted for the current administration, and let's try to have max effect by putting some tariffs on soybeans. You know, at the same time with these steel tariffs, you know, farmers are staring at half the product or the profit margins that they had since 2013, and they're also looking outside and seeing a whole lot of steel and iron in their shops, and so they're going to lose on two sides of this deal.
Interesting, and it has been fascinating to see how these international players do look at trade deals. I mean, with regard to the European Union, Harley-Davidson motorcycles and the Cranberries, and someone was explaining to me, well, that's Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House. That's right in his backyard. So it seems like this is Ali Abu Talabi. It seems like these are not overnight decisions. It sounds like this is some kind of really thought-out stuff.
Well, you're absolutely right. This is part of the international political economy game that countries do play. I mean, the world has changed since the 1940s, and when much of the modern world mechanism was created for trade. So other countries are smart. I mean, you know, they promote their own national interests the best way they can, and nobody should be surprised by that. You know, in terms of, as you mentioned, Harley Davidson and Cranberry and Paul Ryan, you know, Speaker of the House. So they hurt us what they can in order to change our behavior, so to speak. And so in the long term, the solution, again, must be structural, must be fundamental. We need to become more competitive. We could use technology, job retraining, for example, as a way to increase productivity. The key is productivity. And we are really good at technology. You know, we have had forever a surplus when it comes to trade of services. As a matter of fact, we've had a service surplus of $242 billion in 2017. So we can focus on that. When it comes to products, again, we could impact our consumption behavior. We could sign better deals, and perhaps we could call other countries' abuses of trade agreements through WTO or G20 or other mechanisms. So there are things that we can do, and that's true. And there are, of course, abuses that other countries do engage in, including intellectual property issues.
Mm-hmm.
So we can call on those countries on those factors. You know, when it comes to videotapes, when it comes to computer software, movie industry, and as such industries, you know, we have complained for a long time that Chinese are not following the rules of the game. So we could push them on those factors. But these are long-term, long-haul approaches, and they cannot just simply declare something via Twitter and expect a resolution of the issue.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. We're talking about how trade decisions made by President Donald Trump and countries around the world are impacting Western Wisconsin. Specifically, we're talking about a list of tariffs that the president has announced targeting China and also imported steel and aluminum. On the panel for the show today, we've got Scott Sinner. He's a partner with SBNB Foods, which produces food-grade soybean products for export. They've got facilities in Bloomer and other facilities in North Dakota. Joining us also is Mark Tyler, president of local manufacturer OEM Fabricators in Woodville, which uses a lot of steel, makes specialty products for use in other, works with other companies as a contract manufacturer. Ali Abu Talabi is a political science professor at UW-Eau Claire who studies international trade. We'll be right back with more West Side. We can still take your call. We've got open phone lines, 1-800-228-5615. Let us know what you think about all this trade mumbo-jumbo.
On Central Time, you hear about what's making news in Wisconsin, whether it's in the halls of the state capitol or on the shores of Lake Superior. We examine national stories through the lens of life in the Badger State, and we talk about how the biggest events of the day will affect us right here in Wisconsin. We ask what you think about politics, the economy, and much more. Join us weekdays on Central Time from 3 until 7 or online anytime at WPR.org.
On WPR, you get thoughtful programming that brings you news and information from close to home and from around the world. Contributing members, including the growing number of sustainers, keep WPR's future secure. Thank you. Include WPR in your social media mix. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for Wisconsin news, links, and photos from programs and hosts. Find all our social media links at WPR.org/community.
I'm Rich Kramer. You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this hour. We're talking about tariffs announced by President Donald Trump and his administration against China and against countries that import steel and aluminum to the U.S. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. If you've got a question or a comment, how do you think this is all playing out locally? We're speaking about that with Ali Abutalabi. He's a political science professor at UW-Eau Claire, and Mark Tyler, president of OEM Fabricators in Woodville and Scott Center, partner with SBNB Foods, which produces soybean products that are exported internationally. They've got operations in Bloomer. 1-800-228-5615. I wanted to talk about, Mark Tyler, I wanted to ask you about the general, market, the stock market. At the end of last week, it was down about 1,100 points, and you mentioned that steel prices had been going up because the economy was doing better. And also we heard from Scott Sinner, who says a lot of farmers are looking at their products. You know, farm equipment uses a heck of a lot of steel and aluminum. So we're not talking just about direct impacts, of course, but I wanted to ask you, with the market being down 1,100 points today, I think it's gone up about 400, but still lower after all these trade announcements were made by the president and his administration. What's the indirect cost that could be a result if these things aren't worked out?
Well, that sounds like a question for an economist, and I know if you ask an economist, if you ask 10 economists, you'll get 20 answers. So I think in terms of what broader impacts might be, you know, Ali might be in a better position to answer that than I am. We don't pay a lot of attention to the stock market. We pay a lot of attention to, production levels and employment levels and those kinds of things. And the market has been strong, continues to be strong. I think that, the folks that are in the stock market aren't necessarily the same folks that are building products.
Right. That is truer words were never spoken. Ali Abutalabi, broad impacts over these things. I mean, the stock market in the U.S. is down. I saw that some of the trading in Asian countries were down after the China announcement last week. What could happen to the economy as a whole here, do you think?
Well, as was mentioned, there are many variables that impact stock market. Uncertainty is one major thing. Again, we talk about that. Such behavior, again, breeds uncertainty in the market, and investors, they do know how to react, so that would negatively impact the stock market. But, of course, stock market, again, for the most part, reflects about 30 companies in the Dow Jones, for example. And the investors, they look at the future trend and speculate in the market. You can think about the case of Facebook, which lost billions in valuation over the weekend because of all the rumors that came about the Facebook and its negative impact about information and all that. So there are many factors can impact the stock market. Our debate about tariff, again, is not totally without an impact. You could also argue the stock market has been overvalued anyway.
Right.
They needed time for adjustment, so to speak. But at the minimum, again, such uncertainties are not good for the stock market, so to speak.
Now, today, as I mentioned, I kind of alluded to a little earlier, China Premier, and I'm probably going to screw this name up terribly, but Li Keqiang announced today that China was willing to treat foreign and domestic businesses equally. It would not force foreign firms to transfer technology, which was a complaint from the Trump administration, and would strengthen intellectual property rights. All this is part of some ongoing negotiations. So I guess the question is, Ali, is it working? Is the president's approach working in that respect? If the U.S. can get those concessions in writing from China?
You know, all countries put restrictions on technology and technology transfer, amount of investment, the share of investment, and so on and so forth. So we always accuse Chinese of monopolizing the economy and closing the doors to American companies. And, of course, the Chinese would like to have better access to American technology and technology transfer. We also accuse Chinese of doing intellectual property theft, kind of not respecting the patent rights and causing billions of dollars cost to the American companies. So these are really matters of bilateral negotiations. As a developing country, China, of course, would like to have the best of both worlds. They would like to have access to foreign investment and services and technology transfer while protecting the economy. And on the other hand, we would like to have, again, a bigger market share in China and protect our own technology, which give us an advantage when it comes to export of services. Mm-hmm. So there's always this kind of duality of the roles and costs and benefits. And there is no magical way out of this except you sit and negotiate. Of course, if you are in a stronger position, you can gain better through negotiations. And that's where the states come in, you know, if the Chinese are a good negotiator or not. You know, they always sign great deals, I guess, with Walmart, which is a major importer of Chinese products into this country. And again, Walmart counts every penny when it comes to negotiating with China, and the negotiation is always ongoing. These are matters of state-to-state relationship, but the extent of intellectual property abuse, or the extent of negotiation, bilateral, multilateral approaches, all of this can also be negotiated through WTO for the long term.
And I wanted to talk about soybeans again. Scott Sinner, you mentioned that if China really wants to hit us where it hurts, that they would announce tariffs after the farmers have planted their beans. So then what is going through your mind as you're getting ready to plant beans? Because we talked prior last week or over the weekend that your food-grade products are different than just the mass exports of soybeans, but that your company, SBNB Foods, does both, correct?
Actually, our company, we export just food-grade soybeans.
Right.
So we're not dealing with anything in the feed market other than the stuff that we're cleaning out of the food grade stuff we just take to the local feed elevator.
I thought you also had soybeans in production as well.
Yeah, and also we farm. Yeah, so on our own farm, it's definitely something that we're looking at very, very closely. I'll be honest with you. One of the things that we look at very close is the basis levels and the potential for basis increases with a tariff, because quite frankly, if there is a tariff that is applied to soybeans after planting, the only way that these traders are going to be able to sell soybeans to China is to buy them cheaper, and so that's going to go right back to the local elevator. They're going to increase their basis levels, which are already higher than they have been in a long time, and it's just going to make things tougher for the farmer. And that's a scary thing. And so, you know, from a risk standpoint right now, we think the basis risk is something that farmers need to be paying attention to.
So we've got a few minutes left. I want to go round robin, and I'll start with you, Scott Sinner. You know, in the perfect world, what do you like as far as a conclusion to all of this? I mean, of course, it never ends, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, a perfect world would be free trade. I mean, agriculture, U.S. agriculture competes very, very well in a free trade economy.
Okay.
And so obviously with no tariffs, agriculture does fantastic. Anytime you add barriers, it just makes things a lot more difficult.
Mark Tyler, OEM Fabricators.
I'd probably share a piece of a press release that the Association for Equipment Manufacturers put out in response to the tariffs. Now, AEM is a Milwaukee-based but global organization that represents manufacturers of various kinds of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And their comment was, equipment manufacturers remain disappointed at President Trump for allowing harmful steel tariffs to go into effect today. While exemptions for our strategic partners are encouraging, AEM opposes any steel tariffs as they disrupt the entire global trading system. So this is an organization that represents equipment manufacturers from all parts of the world. That's their view on it.
And Ali Abitlabi.
I think multilateralism, negotiation through international organizations such as WTO or G20, as well as bilateral negotiations. The United States representative, trade representative, and the Commerce Department are as important as the State Department or Defense Department. And these are the tools or the agencies that the United States must use in order to get better access to other countries' markets. But unilateral approach to global trade is not going to work.
Thank you, gentlemen, for your discussion. Mark Tyler is president of OEM Fabricators in Woodville. Scott Sinner is partner with SBNB Foods. And Ali Abitlabi is a political science professor at UW-Eau Claire. Fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for your help. Next week, we're going to talk about meteor timber and environmental challenges to frac sand mining projects. I'd also like to thank Team Westside for the help. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.